No problem, thank you so much, I just wanted to tell the committee.
Oh, excellent.
And also.
Well, it's timely, because it's the workshopping forum, where what we'll do as a working group is to start to put out some categories of areas where there may be some changes based on what we heard at the initial public forums. And some of those will be very directly related to the code and any proposed changes or clarifications or interpretive types of things with the code. Other areas that we're going to put out there for the public forum for workshopping have to do more with what we were hearing about issues that were not perhaps directly related to the code, but concerns about transparency and reporting, and training and education. So we're working on kind of a matrix of those areas, and we don't plan on putting out to the public yet some, you know, fully formulated proposals, because what we'd like to do is to put out enough so that then through the public forum we can have people to react and say, well, yeah, these were the areas we thought were important, and perhaps ideas about filling in those areas. And then the next stage will be developing them into more clearly defined proposals for public comment at the third public forum, which will be on the two sessions. So we're still working with the idea of the schedule being the end of April, that we'll have proposals to this body. We're still working on that as our goal. I don't know, other people who were there might, you know, have ideas. I mean, Carlton, Matt, you know, other things to fill in with what our meeting was like.
Oh, no, this isn't directly related to this topic, but am I supposed to record?
Yeah, actually, I was gonna see, if Dale is sitting outside, I may have him just step foot in the room.
So he walked past.
He walked past, okay, thanks. He was getting ready for me. This happened in a couple of minutes, but it's not a large issue. So if you please just see, I mean, we're in a committee of the whole meeting, so we start off, we are still meeting.
Okay.
Thank you, I appreciate the clarification.
Thank you.
In terms of the working group, as Reese said, they're a productive meeting. The committee actually commended Reese's leadership at the meeting,
yes.
So, and the productivity of the working group. The UA meeting yesterday, had multiple UA members also say they are pleased that we're moving forward, and that they are looking forward to, at the very least, looking at, or giving the permission to just go to the CIC to look at it for the semester. And also, President Pollock, in her address to the UA yesterday, noted the working group and said that this is, that it's going to take over, unfortunately, the summer is not an issue in her mind, that she is willing to wait and work with the working group, and that it's reasonable that right down the year that's not, that's going over slightly. So, any questions or comments for Risa? Hearing none, actually, I'm going to add really briefly, the JCC search process has concluded. The final meeting was last night for the final interviews. As I was served as the University Assembly's representative, the group had four finalists, a very productive discussion. The finalists have been ranked and have been sent off to the president for her review. The president will then, on her decision, will communicate to the University Assembly, which will be publicly posted. We expect the final candidate will be able to attend our one of our meetings. Until such time as it's public, I'm not going to say who it is, but I believe that we had an excellent discussion, and I'm very glad that there's always at the UA able to, that the process is able to involve the community and work with the law school. And actually, also, I received an interesting question, which, Kendall, I don't know, the JCCs don't have to check in after law students.
Yeah.
Okay, because someone had told me they do, and I said, it's an interesting tidbit.
We generally only advertise to law students, but anyone who inquires, I wouldn't turn away. But I think it is advantageous to have a legal background.
This is something interesting. But anyway, so that's an update on that. That moves us to the housekeeping code changes. So that also puts us to 1 minute. We have the amended chart as well as the amended flow chart. Based on our discussions last week, I think the flow chart might be the easiest way to look at this. We changed a couple, some slight wording on the in terms of the language regarding this. And I'm open to anything. This is just based on my impression of the conversation, is not binding in the slightest. Are there any comments or questions does that mean? No.
This is.
The diagram. The one change that we did mention was in terms of length of having a limit on the length of the documents actually submitted to the chair. That is something that we could do through hearing board procedures, but assuming that we want that, I also in the comments have a sample of language that could have a little bit of, say, two typewritten pages, all that, and obviously just to illustrate it.
Procedural rules I know are House representatives, but in the House Committee of the Whole, you can have votes. They're just so
yes, we can have votes. We can make.
We can have votes here. So you know, we wanted to move acceptance of this. We could do that, and it'd be a report that goes back to the full committee once we have a quorum.
That is correct.
Right?
Yes.
So.
You
yourself
speak. You
want to?
You
saw
the floor. I've had
Michelle speak. Well, when Michelle has spoken and anybody else has spoken, then I'll move it that we do this.
Is there any way that we can just cut out that last sentence? Chairs may evaluate multiple renewal requests on the same case only if all other currently serving chairs have reviewed an equal number of requests in the case. The reason that I say that is because, for example, one of our hearing board chairs has a broken hip, so she's not hearing cases.
Okay.
And so if this language stays there, her inability to excuse herself isn't there anymore. And so I just, my thoughts on the resolution have been made, but that's a part that I think creates some procedural risk that we don't need to carry.
Understood. I guess the intent and the reason it was there, the idea was you don't want us to go bouncing back and forth between two chairs. You prefer to use the actively serving pool. So assuming there are or three active chairs, you can go around them instead of just going back and forth. I'm not sure if that's a concern that you think would actually happen or needs language, but that was something that when I was trying to put words in how you to articulate a rotating area chair, trying to ensure that we in essence don't leave room for even the appearance that might be possible.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of trust. And so the word a different hearing board chair shall review each additional request. You're limiting the ability for us to actually enforce this procedure.
But it seems like actually the last sentence increases your ability to enforce it in terms of saying that, you know, I mean, if you just ended it with each additional request, you might run out of different hearing board chairs, which would mean that there's no place to go. So I thought the last sentence was to basically say you could actually go back to the same person if you've run out of already, you know, of currently serving chairs. And if somebody's actually got a broken hip, they're probably really not serving.
I mean,
they are, though.
There may be ways to tweak the language. I think.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it could be currently available. I don't know.
Well, I think that was also part of the concern was A, make it clear that you want the little pool, but also the idea that. My concern was if you say a different hearing board chair shall review each additional request, I could see someone saying, well, we've only all three hearing board chairs have reviewed it, or four, and we're out of hearing board chairs, therefore you can't have a different one, therefore the order must expire. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to prevent either A, confusion over that, and also ensure that we don't have the ping pong effect. So I think I know personally as the person who wrote it, I have no concerns with tweaking it in terms of ensure those that's what I was thinking when I was attempting to what I understood it conveys point of view.
Maybe someone just like hearing more chairs shall rotate the review of each additional request or something.
Yeah.
I worry because what someone's going to say is, well, you didn't do all four chairs. Like, well, chair three is not that. So I just, that's my head.
There are five hearing boards? How many hearing board chairs?
There's four hearing board chairs, one review, and one administrative chair.
So there are six that would be reduced.
Only four.
So if you go through once and then you go through the second time, you got eight. That's 160 days. 64 days.
Or are we 168 days?
right? No, my math is bad. 168 days. I'm just thinking out loud. I think rotate. So renewal requests on the same case will rotate through all serving chairs. Once that rotation is complete, then you will repeat the rotation. That's what you want.
In terms of my understanding, Michelle's concern was the idea that one of the hearing board chairs has had injured herself. And sometimes, I mean, you want to actively hear. I mean, this is obviously you don't want to cabinet too narrow, but you want to make it too broad. In terms of, in essence, if the professor who has injured herself is not hearing cases, is she an active, when she's still on the roster as a hearing board chair, even though in essence it's a.
Putting it twice as a problem. I mean, that's truly an exception. I think all of this is really truly an exception. So we shouldn't worry over much about it.
We're just adding the word available before currently. Other available currently serving chairs, that's it. I would say that she's not available if her hip is broken or her arm's sabbatical. Mm-hmm. Would that alleviate your concern?
Well, I was also addressed if they're out of the car, in essence, it's off contact.
Sure. The hearing board chair can say they don't want to review it, is that right?
I mean, they could recuse themselves.
They could recuse themselves.
But that would require them to respond. So, say they're out of the country and they can't recuse themselves. I'd rather have it be like they're affirmatively available than like.
I mean, it's assuming that it's a form of motion. Sure. Okay. So on the last line, the penultimate line, the last sentence, I should say, a motion to amend it to read, chairs may evaluate multiple renewal requests on the same case, only if all other currently available serving chairs have already reviewed an equal number of requests on that case.
Isn't serving redundant?
You're right. So, I would.
Available chairs.
Yes, of all currently available chairs. So I'll take that as the motion then. Is there a second to the motion? Second. Moving to the discussion of the motion, it would be still replacing the word serving with available. Is there any comments or questions on that motion to amend? Hearing none, there is a speakers list. The chair will put the question. Is there any dissent to incorporating that as an amendment to this provision? Hearing none, the provision is so incorporated. We're back in discussion. Are there any other comments or questions concerning this language or changes, shortcomings, or anything else that anyone present would like to note?
Have the complainants advisors been shown this language?
I don't think they're different.
The complainants advisors don't deal with the code of conduct.
But they sometimes serve as resources if they don't know where the case starts or if the case is. I'm sorry, confidential advisors, not the complainants advisors. So like Nina Cummings, the women that are, have they seen that? Because even though a lot of these cases come in 6.4, there are times in which there's confidential resources, which. So I'm just thinking of stakeholder. This is what's being proposed. Like I think this is fine language to propose. I just when you look at the constituencies of who's being represented, I think that's the only piece that we're missing.
Well, actually, I appreciate raising that because that adds clarity to one of the president's responses when the president asked why they had not been consulted, and I was actually at a loss and actually put a request for clarification. And I know, see where you're coming from. This language, in essence, hasn't been. That means that I had a conversation with the administration yesterday, and that our goal is after this is done, I actually notify the Graduate Professional Student Assembly we're undertaking this at their meeting on Monday. My goal is to, in essence, go around forming assemblies. The intent is to hold some form of forum or office hours or something public, or I'm thinking about this, we might just do 6 hours of office hours and say, I will be there, and I'll have to introduce to join me. We'll be there for however long to receive any and all comments, to have a discussion. Essence to ensure that it's cast broadly, but I would be delighted to share this with the confidential advisor. That being said, I have no speakers list for this. So are there any?
I have a question, Matt. So if we provisionally send this back to the full committee, we can post it for public comment.
Well, that is precisely what I was going to say. If we were to provisionally approve it, I've already been chopping some of the provisionally approved language around just for the sake of public comment, with the caveat that it still could be changed. If this committee all were to say yes, I would then start publicly circulating this and have to start soliciting comments.
Good.
So that we are able to move forward with this, knowing that we have one left.
But I move we approve it.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second? Second, any dissent to voting on that question? Hearing none, all who are in favor, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed? All make abstain. I vote 4-0-1. The committee of the whole announces this language. I will ensure it's on the agenda for the next whatever CJC means. Hopefully, if someone is able to join us and get a quorum, but I also will start the process of ensuring that the public is named as aware they possibly can be for this language. That brings us, there's one other change that we actually, after discussing with the hearing board chairs last week, that was placed on, it's in the grid, in terms of increasing the size of judicial boards and slightly tweaking the process in terms of how they're solicited. So the first change is increasing the hearing board's pool after the request from the hearing board chair that they think the pool is too small. Increasing the pool size by 20 members, 10 students, 5 faculty, and 5 non-faculty employees. However, in reading this, the current language in the code also has some other vagueness. It actually says, currently, faculty members are nominated by the other faculty. It doesn't actually say to where they are nominated. Traditionally, they've been nominated direct to the UA. However, after checking, the UA bylaws actually say, even if they're nominated to the UA in theory should be sending it down to us because the bylaws say the hearing board recruitment is a CJC matter. And therefore, I propose potentially saying the faculty nominates them to us because in essence, a circular process is redundant. However, we can fall back on there's political concerns. We can certainly say we'll leave that out and it will go to the full UA or the UA will send it back down. Additionally, there is in essence, breaking it out, trying to clarify it as well. For students and non-faculty employees, also staff. CJC solicits the right applications. The Office of Assemblies provides the district support. This was proposed a couple of years ago. The concern, which was raised by the Office of Assemblies at the time, was that CJC is not doing the soliciting, it is the Office of Assemblies, to which our response at the time was the Office of Assemblies runs the Qualtrics, helps with the communications push. However, the questions are determined by us, the timeline is determined by us, the review process is determined by us, and that to provide clarity, because there was some confusion that if the Office of Assemblies is soliciting applications, wait a minute, are they the ones who have to approve everything when in practice it is the committee who does it? The Office of Assemblies assists us in that regard. So those are the changes that were made here. Are there any comments or questions on the making the split if there are concerns with just adjusting the hearing board size as well as the process? But in reading it, it appeared simple to break it out into A and B for faculty and everyone else, and to hopefully try and add some clarity. Richard.
So we have three different sets of changes. The one is the numbers,
That's top. Correct. Yes.
Then we have A and we have B.
That's correct.
So looking at A, for consideration by, what does consideration mean?
Consideration, that would be in essence, they come in with the regular hearing board applications, we review them, and then would determine whether or not to recommend that the full University of the Assembly will vote up or down on them.
So it's basically a review, it's a substantive review of the Dean of Faculty's recommendations.
That is correct.
And it could be rejected, that's what I'm trying to get at.
That is correct.
So for consideration,
because right now the language just says faculty members are nominated by the dean of faculty.
No, I've got that. I'm just saying, if we wanted to make it, trying to tighten it just a bit, so it's because consideration is
broad,
kind of vague. That so review would that do it? I mean, what we want is to make it clear that it's a substantive review. Mm-hmm. That's in parallel in some ways with the students and non-faculty.
So we could use the word review. I mean, in essence, it all ties into the last paragraph where it says the codes and judicial committee shall nominate the candidates. In essence, the idea is that they all come into us, we sort through them, and then the UA will then take them from us. It also accords with where our bylaws are written.
No, I understand that. It's just, I think review is better than consideration.
Of course. So, I'm saying motion to amend that.
Yeah.
Motion to replace consideration with review. Is there a second on that motion?
No, second.
We had a discussion on the motion. Are there any comments or questions on the motion? Hearing none, is there any dissent to accepting that motion? Amending the word consideration to review. Hearing none, the word is amended. The resolution will allow read faculty members are nominated by the dean of faculty for review by the codes and judicial committee. Richard, did you have anything you wanted to add on the size of the pool or the clarification regarding the way student and employee applications are solicited?
Looks fine to me, and when ready, I would move acceptance.
I know, just from, as I mentioned, the office has had a concern in the past about that they said that they felt they had a role in this process. And that's, I mean, historically, the CJC really has been the driver behind this. And to me, it's important that the code reflect that reality. That being said, I would imagine the office assemblies, if they sort of may not be, they've raised concern in that area.
So Matt, I do have a kind of a, yeah, I do have a question. So 75 members, that's 35 students. How many applications we get from students?
That's the next, actually. That's the next part. Traditionally, last year, we received 100 and some change, maybe 100.
Okay, so there's no problem filling that out.
Yes.
The 20 non-faculty employees?
We work with the employee assembly to get more people to apply.
Because we're increasing it by 5. Yes. And if we've had trouble with 15 going to 20?
In essence, it would generally be we'd be at 14 and having trouble getting to 15. Last year, we had enough applicants, but I believe 2 years ago, we had one seat that was vacant until the fall, so we could find someone.
What happens if we don't get 20 applicants?
Well, I can tell you from 2 years ago, we actually had 3 applicants, and the CJC nominated 2. The CJC said the third person, even though there are seats, did not feel this person was qualified to serve and didn't put the person forward. So the rest of there would be left as vacant seats on the pool. Okay, but in essence, the seats are authorized.
But in general, you don't think the numbers will be a problem?
For the faculty, historically, my understanding is it wouldn't be. For the students, we have always planned applications.
So it's raising the non-faculty employees, it might be a problem.
Potentially. That being said, I don't think it would be, even though they tend to have influence with applications, I didn't want to give them less of a voice in the process, even though we occasionally have trouble filling it.
Okay.
And I should note one more thing. Also, part of the reason for the clarification around the role of CJC and the role of the office assemblies is that they're regretfully addition to the fact that the reality is that we are driving seat. There has been very much issues with that office in terms of receiving the applications, handling the data. The office has said we're not allowed to access certain portions of it. It has gone back and forth. It has gone up. It has gone down. It has built numerous. Eventually, the CJC eventually always got what it was requesting. But the fact of the matter is they would say, oh, the code says we solicit. And after some wrangling, it always turned out where we needed to, but it just created a massive headache for everyone involved, which is also part of why I need to standardize the process, which is also why we're looking to version of the code and seeing prudent to do that. That being said, I've done a lot of talking. Is there anyone who'd like to speak on this?
I move.
You move this language. Is there a second on that?
Wait a second.
Second.
A second. Any dissent to approving this? All those who are in favor of, and also just to clarify, the CDC will still look at this one fully. All in favor of the committee of the whole referring to the CDC with approval, please raise your placard. All opposed? Chair will abstain. I will report 0-1.
And we can post this too.
Yeah, we posted them. I will post the entirety of the changes, which are completed now, are up to 9 or 10, to the, and start soliciting public comment. They said I had a conversation with the administration yesterday about what they're looking for. They said they don't want to prescribe it, but they said public comments with the assemblies, public comment on our website, and potentially a forum or office hours where members of the community could attend. They explicitly caveat it in it. If turnout is low, that is also not a problem. If they do have to provide the opportunity, notice, and then after that, those who choose from Rock 10 will be able to, those who don't.
When you do that, Matt, would you circulate to us the site? And for example, I'll give it to Charlie,
of course,
and Charlie can send it to the faculty.
The changes in this case would just be bare changes. They wouldn't necessarily have a commentary.
No, no, that's fine. I want him to have it.
Of course. So that moves us to the next portion, which is the University Hearing Reward Staffing Update, which is, it's interesting because this year we are, because of, it's went off later than usual, but application stuff to close Friday, and I received just before the meeting an update from the Office of Assembly in terms of where we are at applications. This year, we actually appear to be below where we normally are, in that we've only received 16 applications. We received one graduate professional student, three staff, and 12 undergrads. I have been speaking and taking steps to increase, or as an increased publicity. I have been working with the Office of Assembly so that they may do a push. It turns out we may need to extend the application over the spring break. As I said before, we had a bit of a hiccup with getting anything off at the beginning of the period. However, historically, we generally have been able to 115-ish applications, so we are well behind that tally, and I don't know if it's due to a notice. Traditionally, it also would go to all students. This year, it hasn't. It was put primarily in newsletters, which may or may not have been read. So I will be speaking with the Office of Assembly to ensure that, as much as possible, there is a push for people to apply, because these numbers are concerningly low, although they are very abnormal, that we generally have a very large number of applications.
Why do you think that?
I had to guess. It is being done later in the year, where before break. I had speculated that for those reasons. Additionally, the student assembly is doing elections right now, so the student body, or the individuals who are involved in the student body and who are generally asked to help plug these, are focused on their elections. Mm-hmm. I believe the graduate freshman student trustee election is also in campaign process. There are so many, there's a lot of other things going on right now, and therefore the attention being given to this, unfortunately, may not be as high as it's been historically, but I'm confident we will be able to increase the application. Sure.
Is there a way to put something in the Daily Sun or like an advertisement just saying that it's been extended for this long of time if you're interested in serving for his budget?
We certainly can. We have a budget that I will request the Office of Assembly to look at that. I'm going to email them later this evening. For sure.
So one of the things, we talked about this before a little bit, we could also contact directly those who are currently serving on the boards.
What we decided was, on my user list, you have the administrative chair reach out to those who are currently serving, whose terms are expiring, asking them if they would wish to renew.
Yes.
And then after doing that, they come to us. I have that draft email sitting on my desk. I was up very late to some other matters, but that will be going out so that we will be determining how many seats we actually have to fill.
Yeah.
And historically, we've had a lot more applications, so it's...
So another question, the deadline is Friday?
Friday at 12 noon, which we can't extend, and I think we may have.
But we can't extend without a quorum?
There's a certain point where I would.
You just do it. Just do it. what we can do is authorize. I move that Matt be authorized in whatever way that we can
like
do
email
it.
Email everyone.
Well, I will notify the committee.
Yeah.
Yes, no, that's yeah. A good, yes. But
I will also,
let's try to do it a little bit correctly, but let's do it.
I will notify the committee. I will also notify the executive committee of the University Assembly, because they technically have emergency authority in the event, for whatever reason, due to breaks or other things, there needs to be an early decision. We'll make sure that it's up to above bar in terms of proceeding, but I suspect we will be extending it probably for another week. That being said, we also have to be aware that we have to review these, so there's a certain point where we have, one year we did do a rolling where it was please come in and we'll review them as needed. That was 3 years ago, and by doing that, we ended up going from 50 to 100 some odd applications, so we ended up, but I will certainly circulate that in terms of extending the deadline. I'm actually quite glad the original that was supposed to be today, so I'm very happy that we didn't do that. That being said, are there any questions or comments on the University Hearing Board staffing? Michelle?
Yeah, just a couple of things on the questions.
Absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. I know you mentioned that. I had written that down.
Number nine was a question that I thought was biased towards Jay's office, that we could have some revisions towards that. I think number 10 is a little bit confusing, and I think question 13 is for what you're trying to do. And then question 11, transcript annotation is not the purview of the code. It's the university register policy, so it's not a question that I think we have the authority to ask. We follow the university's transcript notation policy. So I don't want to put that in the hands of potential members seeing that they have that authority when it's not theirs. So,
well, in terms of the code, and we actually did the discussion that we had last year, the code does have some provisions on transcript annotation. It's an ongoing, I've had some discussions. In essence, the idea is still to be illustrator in terms of the transcript annotation was meant to be seen as a higher level penalty.
Yeah, this changed, remember, this summer by the university registrar. So they
I agree the university registrar had done that. I would disagree, and again, because it was before the committee, and it was going to be taken out of the code without consultation of the committee. Again, if it's being used as a penalty, it should be in the code. The university registrar has made a decision, I understand that, but this committee, until such time as it's decided to formally not to discuss it, is still looking at it.
So it's not a penalty. So that's, I think, where we're conflating, right? So we're looking at the transfer annotation as something different from a penalty that's listed in the code of conduct. So the code actually just talks about notations with conduct charges pending. And so anything outside that scope, we defer to university policy because it's silent on that. So I think asking that question is disingenuous. And I think it's something that if we want to look at a code amendment, this certainly isn't the purview of the committee, but to ask about something that the university has already made a decision on doesn't seem fair to bring up that.
Okay, Richard.
Yeah. So, I think Michelle, what you would change here would be one suspension and expulsion, and then the rest, and or transcript annotation. You'd strike that.
Yeah, I think the asking about the, and I think. Question 11 was responsive to Chair Mooney's comments. Any potential warrant suspension or dismissal as penalties?
The purpose of this, these application questions are to inform us.
That is correct. It's meant to really probing at the thought process.
Right. It's not. So I think it simplifies things just to say suspension and expulsion as penalties. It just simplifies things, so we don't, because the information, I mean, I this discussion about annotation back and forth, I wouldn't pass this test. And knowing I wouldn't pass this test, whatever I saw in an application that referred to it, I wouldn't know what to do with. So I would just make it suspension and expulsion as penalties, just because for our purposes, you know, it's that's what we're after, you know. So this has already gone out, though, right?
Yeah. So these are actually for context for the last item, for the penultimate item of business on our agenda.
So
we can certainly add commission notes that we put in the folder for next year. These are the questions that are on the application.
Yeah. No. It's already gone out, so it's not a
question. I know we talked about 2 weeks ago.
It was already, the questions were already gone out by that.
But I do think the simplification would be a good idea.
Super late, but.
So, the questions were approved by the committee in the fall by four motions, by the exception there was one of the minutes. But I am more than happy to make notes that they speak new words in the future. They were approved by the committee, therefore went out in your position. Therefore, that's what they are.
So, a number nine, Michelle, what was it?
So I guess I don't understand why we're still discussing. But number nine, so it talks about the code requires both parties with certain timelines and stuff like that. And so it seems like question nine is just presuming that the JA's office doesn't follow procedures. And so I think a better question would have been, if the timelines in the code weren't followed by either party, how would you have handled it? I think that's part of the presumption that our office is this hard-nosed prosecutorial we're just administrators. We just follow the code with that. So I guess I was confused with that because it just seemed like it seemed irrelevant that we were talking about this. This is already brought up now.
Well, that's when I mean, it's in a packet because for the next item, which we can, I will just preview. In essence, looking at the column 6.4, your application questions, I provide a blank for that context. And for context, I provide an arbitrary word question as a string as a point of comparison. They are, I guess, related to the application, to the fact that we're currently have their staffing is ongoing, but they are meant for the following order of business. That being said, I'm more than happy to sit down and determine the changes we'd like to make so that will be majorly considered for the next year, because there's no the question is, it really is to try and probe thought process. Is not meant to assign blame or vilify anyone, at least call your office. And I'm more than happy to answer the committee as well, sit down and tweet that language. Because at this point, when you raise that concern, I agree with your concern. So everything was already loaded on operational when we were moving forward. That being said, are there any other comments or questions regarding the hearing board staffing? Hearing none, that moves us to the next agenda item, which specifically this time, and I actually have to talk to Glenn, I mean, to narrow this, this is a very broad item. This case, looking at the policy 6.4 selection questions. So there's an attachment regarding the questionnaire for school applicants for 6.4, and then some questions for hearing board questions. The reason I have attached this is because it's chair of the CDC that the student I was asked to serve on the 6.4 hearing board selection panel in the fall with myself, three others, dean of faculty, a representative of student campus life, and a representative, I believe, of council office that I could be mistaken. And they would determine the hearing board count in 6.4. My understanding is the hearing boards are not listed publicly, which is a separate issue. But the question is this application, if you read through it, you can, and we did an application where the answers were no, 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 no. You can answer the same questions with your, these are all, they're the essence. They're all questions that can be answered yes or no answers. So we did receive multiple applications where we received the exception of your name and why you're interested. The rest of the questions were no, which didn't provide much context. And the Sarah Apple at the time had said that she'd be more than willing to look and work with on these questions. And considering that our question, the thought behind it, as we just said, is to evoke a thought, as a trying to get a thought process and how you approach things. I provided our hearing board questions as a juxtaposition, and then ideas we can have a discussion about, is there something in terms of seeing these questions, what would we like to recommend? And that this is really the recommendation, but a lot of it is something that is important, because having sat on the hearing board panel, or discussion panel, it was very hard to make decisions upon who to appoint, and even after this, the comment coordinator actually would contact applicants to provide verbal information, would then be reported back to us. I would never cast aspersions against the integrity of the Title IX coordinator, but in terms of a purely procedural standpoint, having the Title IX coordinator reach out to potential hearing board applicants before they're seated to receive clarity on their answers is, from an optics point of view, problematic in my estimation. So that being said, I'd like to review these applications to the information really briefly.
Is it possible just to say what reservations, if any, you have? So that way that people are prompted to answer and you don't have to add anything if they don't have reservations.
Well, certainly can. Speaking personally, I think that's something that we could and should do in terms of that's an easy change. That being said, a lot of, I think, the strength of hearing board questions, my personal opinion, again, is that by having the hearing boards, by looking at thought process, you know, we can't predict fact patterns. We don't know how people are going to react with our boards. It is a trying to have people think how they approach problems or issues. But that's the underlying philosophy for our questions. It seems that questions on the 6.45 are, in my estimation, looking primarily at no objectives. Or reservations of handling the actual process, always depending on references, or by crime, how is companies handle that? And it seems like they're getting at different things in terms of, one is, I mean, I think these questions, your reservations, but also it's, you don't have very good reservations, but I really make determine, are these people qualified to be in these
instances of glasses, first on that committee, which would be the chair of the CDC, either two, has precious amount of information to go on. Or that issue that can go on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
But after somebody fills this out, then what happens? And I think you did explain something about that, but I understand this.
So the hearing board 6.4 panels are staffed by faculty and staff. They are not staffed by students. As Nick, I discussed with President Karen a few ago, that's an ongoing question. Yeah. I personally believe students, first and foremost, have graduate students at the very least. Considering that their graduate students are older than staff faculty throughout the campus. However, staff would apply to fill this out. Generally, there was my understanding is various administrators would reach out to they thought could be good at serving. They would then apply. The contact their people would say, oh, ex administrator asked me to apply. They'd fill this out. It would go to this quasi, it's four people. Especially one patient constituency. And if it's so the CDC chair of a student, otherwise a member of the CDC who is a student, we review them and then they're confirmed to serve on the boards. That's the end of it. The boards, my understanding, don't have a hard cap. It's more or less they're trying to grow the boards because they don't have enough people. Then they're growing their members out. But the process in essence is the only check for the community is this application and that process. And
what else do they put in for their application? Maybe it's in here, but
it's just this. This is the only document you see.
This is it?
That's correct.
There's no interviews or anything? This is it?
That's correct.
Okay.
We are empowered to ask questions. And questions were then relayed to the candidate by the top line coordinator, who then relayed what answered back. As I mentioned, I have those comments on our top line coordinator. From an office point of view, I'm concerned that having the title line coordinator going out,
right,
talking to prospective hearing boards and assuming receiving clarification questions from us is not sound for me, just from an optics and perspective.
So this plus any questions you give to the title line coordinator to go talk.
Correct. And that's it. And review, I don't mean this in a direct or a negative fashion. The review was much less rigorous than the review we give our hearing board candidates.
Mm-hmm.
It took two sessions over the course of about an hour. We had less candidates, but the application provided us information. And the discussion was a little bit more perfunctory than ours have been historically. Mm-hmm. And I will flat out that was opposed. There was one candidate who had been seen on the board who I was opposed to when I was outvoted. And to me, that case is, and that's the way it goes. But just the concern that we don't have a lot of information with the process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stakeholder in 6.4, I think it's important to make you aware of it. Especially when some of my critics that you'd be happy to hear our feedback and actually look forward to it, which is why it's before us. I have Michelle, and then I have Rita, one of the speakers. Okay, Michelle and Rita.
Yeah, I think one of the questions that I think is missing is that there seems to be a lot about secondary trauma related to sexual misconduct, but there's nothing really about the prohibited bias and other discrimination. And so I think one of the feedback points I would give is that it should be more inclusive because there's a lot of racial intentional language that gets provided in those that doesn't seem to be asked about people's ability to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just a point of clarification, are we looking at this because we are, we want to change the questions? Like, what are we trying to do right now?
As a stakeholder in Policy 6.4, the committee is empowered to provide written comment and formal recommendations to the entire policy. The 6.4, was in my conversations with Sarah Apple, because I will say the entire selection panel agreed when we said these questions are inadequate. And they said, oh, we are very busy. And so they said, oh, if you have any suggestions and they're very busy, we'd be happy to hear them. Therefore, considering that we are a stakeholder, that even offers that we do the hearing boards every year. And up until 2011, we in essence did the hearing boards for this as well. So therefore, it would make sense. I'd be happy to have the committee look at it. They said that'd be wonderful, which is why we're looking at it now in terms of proposals that we can propose to help them improve their questions. Because my concern is, apparently last year, same concerns that raised this year were raised, they were noted, and nothing changed. And therefore, at the very least, to be able to say, here are some concrete suggestions, please really incorporate them or change them if you see fit with our consultation would be
positive step forward. Can I clarify your question?
So what we're trying to do is come up with a better set of questions right now, or?
It's general discussion. I can start tweaking some questions. In essence, it is to try and see where their concerns about the questions, what concerns there are, and then, as we've done in the past, some of their objections, I will take some of the language we have and then come up with some draft modifications to these questions that we can propose, approve, and send off to the Title IX office for their feedback and discussion.
So a couple of things. One is just in terms of from my own knowledge, and again, I know that you mentioned it, but I kind of missed the whole part of it. First is, how are people identified as people who might apply? Is there a general solicitation way that we describe it for hearing board members? You said something about administrators saying, well, I think you'd be good. Why don't you apply? Is that like a supplemental thing?
My understanding is there is some form of general solicitation.
Mm-hmm.
That's another fact. I'm not sure the exact details about how far it goes in the faculty, but ostensibly that is what I was told. I know from the applications and from being told, various administrators in the process have asked their colleagues, oh, please, you should apply. Consider amounts of information for our consideration, which are very helpful. Others, I said, quite honestly, said no. I'll answer all the questions because it's two issues with no. And that made our job very difficult. So the process right now, I understand, is there's some form of solicitation set up for faculty. I'm not sure how broad that is, and that other people are encouraged to apply. There's a cap on the regular process, so they, in essence, they build a pool of how to do it. And they are framed as well. Their training is also by here.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that these questions are written in a way that are more like the way you might ask a jury question or juristic questions. You don't care about the answer as much as you're using the question to educate people about their obligations, right? And so if that's the purpose, then you're okay. But if the purpose is that to find out something more about the person, their potential, qualifications or suitability, then nobody's going to say, yes, number three, you're just not going to apply. In your reservation, you're not going to apply. So it's just a little unclear. Are these for educational purposes so that people say, oh, this is what I need to think about if I'm actually going to apply? Or is it for you to find out something about the candidate?
My understanding from the way that you then cross or add on to the panel. In essence, it's both. They want to be absolutely aware of what you're walking into.
Right.
I guess you're dealing with some of the worst cases that come through our campus.
Right.
That being said, you were told that our job is to evaluate their fitness to serve on the boards. And there were candidates who we said, if you don't believe our fit to serve on the boards, do the information in here. Are not going to teach you. There is one that I, as an IDR division, that I've voted on, but it is, in essence, there's the notice factor, but it is an actual review of your fitness to serve, not just to say the jury pool questions where we don't necessarily care how you think.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a great issue.
That is precisely the concern that's raised. And so it's why, it sounds like I'm hearing the idea from Carlton is to change from some question to what if, like what if any. So this is instead of a no, you're prompting more of an explanation. Potentially look at some of the thought process questions that are in our applications to add, as well as also looking at the predicate status and thereafter, because those are also adjudicated and that those are also important to have questions about. It's something that has been on the docket for a while. We've been very busy with other code changes, but it's important. Yeah. Richard Paul.
So I'm just catching up because I got food. We're looking at the 6.4 questions. So number, Rena pointed this out to me. And I guess Carlton did the same thing. So you can just answer no, but to the questions, and that would be the appropriate answer. But what if you added something, please explain why you give this answer. I think that'd be a good thing, you know, to because then you would get a text. Mm-hmm. So if they say, no, I have no reservations, you know, please explain why.
Yes.
Where that came from. You know? It's so that would be just an extra line. Not for three, but for four, five, and six. Just an extra sentence. Mm-hmm. I think that'd be a good addition.
Wait, it is my turn.
Yeah. Are there any questions on the UHRB application that are explicitly like not useful in determining who's fit to serve on this guideline board, or would it be useful to just kind of top them and lightly edit these questions and add them in addition to the rest of the board?
There are a few of the demographic. I mean, so there's demographic questions. I think some of those are different. They're already captured. But I think some of the ones about the code requiring X, Y, or Z are also not. But to me, I think the thought process questions are really, and whether they be rewritten from ours, or we experience some new ones. I know from my experience, I've looked at two viewer panels for our appointment for the past 5 years. It's really, that's where the CDC really makes this determination. It's, yes, if you check the boxes, and if you're available, you're willing to serve, and then it's, how do you think, and that's why you need reasons for questions. Yeah. So that's what I think. And that's the value behind our questions, whether you're going to be rewrote the next year.
I think the other kind of question that, and I know that some of your training, but I don't think that there's any questions about weighing evidence and credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we get the question of just how they do it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak?
Actually, no, that's a good point, but it's also ability to deliberate with others is. Because that's what the board does. So something, how, I don't know how you do this, because you're always leading some questions, but how open are you to deliberating with others and hearing other opinions? Something of that sort would be good. You know, you don't want just somebody that comes in and hears stuff and then doesn't change their mind in discussion.
I think the question discusses what violations you believe warrant suspension or expulsion is important, and then also what aggravating factors do you think warrant suspension or expulsion? Sometimes something that seems like it doesn't warrant suspension or expulsion, but if there's other things going on. So I think that's a good way to assess people's perception of suspension. And you don't want someone else to suspend like every violation under the sun.
Thank you. Part of the reason that's here is that my understanding is these questions were written quickly. It hasn't to be done because the policy was done quickly, and there really hasn't been a lot of input today. The reason I brought it here is when I heard, oh, we looked at these questions raised last year, nothing happened. To me, it was either a manpower or a staffing shortage, or it's just it fell off the radar as well. This is something that I think is important to the process as a stakeholder. I think we're more than capable of saying, here's our idea, and it has some small tweaks, that's perfectly acceptable. But at the very least, no, the question is remaining as is, to me, is not conducive to a well functioning process for everyone to solve.
I think mitigating that person.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Do it.
So I have Teresa that agree on and Carl Greer.
Which of us?
Risa.
Okay.
one letter difference.
I don't know if we have anything in our questions about this, but I think particularly in questions under issues under 6.4, one of the concerns is, or questions would be, and I don't know how to word it, but what what do you think the what is the how much weight it should, do people place on the fact that somebody has been charged? Right. Is there a certain credit going off of your credibility point? Is there a certain credibility issue in relation to that a charge has been brought? Does that carry weight in and of itself?
Innocent in general.
Right, that kind of idea. Yeah.
That actually might be.
Since we use the civil law standard under 6.4, it's not even clear and convincing evidence. It's preponderance of evidence. I think in this context, it would be good to have a question that gets at that. I don't know exactly how to ask it.
So what, if any, opinions do you have about the presumption of innocence?
Or what do you think it means?
I was just looking at the UHRB questions, and there's one question about the recusal. Maybe that could be added to, like, you know, as a member of the 6.4 hearing panel, you would be expected to recuse yourself. That's question 13 in the UHRB.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I have the speakers is empty. Are there any other comments or questions?
Could there be something added to UHRB questions for next year about gender roles, gender identity, sexual orientation, and different, just to see if people have, like, make sure to check out bias?
Of course,
I don't know how to word it, but I think that could be valuable because there's students of all identities who come before you.
Absolutely, that's actually good. I understand what angle you're going at, that makes sense.
Yeah.
In terms of you need people to open mind.
Yes,
and not
exactly.
Pre-existing.
Yep,
Richard, did you raise your hand? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Hmm?
Did you read your placard?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I didn't hear Richard approve that. Okay, so that means that is the end of my speakers list. Are there any other comments or questions? Hearing none, we're going to move on to the last type of business.
So can I actually just have one here? Just looking at number six here. I mean, yeah, I think you can take the points.
Number six, I'm sorry, in our questions.
On these questions on the 6.4 questions. I mean, I think that's an example of where people can, you know, you can just change the questions to get at issues like, you know, asking people how do they feel about hearing explicit testimony about sexual acts, you know, it's something that really just asks them, how do you feel about that?
Yes.
You know, I mean, I think these can really be elicit more information for people than they depend on. I mean, this number six is just horribly worded, you know, to the point where you are unable to serve as an effective panel member. But again, who's going to say yes to that? You know. Thanks for bringing these to us.
I would change think to anticipate.
I'm sorry, where are we? Where are we?
On six.
Six?
The think is a little bit odd.
You're right.
To make it anticipate. You know, six is really a tough question. If you put no there, good God. There's a lot of bad stuff in the world.
It depends.
It's a.
I mean, really, you got a lot of no answers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could fill up one and make it look like no, because that's literally what we see in the personal. I mean, the applicants are clearly personal, but a lot of them are just straight no's, or it depends, period.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, not when you're trying, if you're just doing jury pool, it's different. But seeing that our job is ostensibly to have some weighing, it's impossible to move on with that.
I guess it's know it when I see it.
Well, in that case, are there any final comments or questions? Hearing none, the last item of business is the semester outlook, which is, it is hard to believe that we have about a year.
Would it be useful to move to approve these changes or not?
Well, I'm going to go through and do some tweaking.
Okay.
Rewriting. Then I'll have it for our next meeting.
I also have another question, which is, because it came up the UA, the JA's position and that resolution. Michelle, you don't have to leave. But the timeline was to get this down by the end of the semester.
Yes.
So briefly, where are we in that?
Yes, the resolution 11 was accepted as written 2.5-ish weeks ago. I'll check the exact time. It was accepted a short while ago. President Pollack had her meeting yesterday and said she's, the UA said we want to come in the semester. President Pollack was happy with that. But as a community is moving. Gabriel Coffin, the chair of the interview assembly, sent an email to the administration today asking when we might start doing that. The process as written in the resolution and through our bylaws is the executive committee plus myself will medicine's work with the administration to come up with some draft. The draft has to come through us because it's a code change. And therefore, it will then come through this committee. We'll go back to the UA. Timeline is going to be tight. In essence, I'm expecting that the week after the break, we're going to have to be having discussions because it's going to have to make it to a, come to an agreement. It has to make it to our agenda, which then has to make it to the UA's agenda. There has to be some public comment. President Pollack said she wasn't too concerned with public comment on that. However, considering that there have been other concerns with public comment raised by her, I still think it's prudent to do that. I have Michelle on the speaker.
Yeah, so it's just my understanding that something has to be presented to the UA by April 24th, because that's your second to last meeting.
That would be the definition. That would be the soft, honestly, an emergency meeting. That would be the soft deadline, yes.
Okay. Just because the reason I share that is because from an administrative point of view, if that doesn't, if there's no kind of proposed alternate thing, and then we have to look at the code, where it's talking about alternate search in October. That means that the UA community applicant that probably needs to be having a job search posted by mid-June, so that you have a competitive pool of applicants, because you're probably doing a national search. So I want to put that in that line, that's something that if you guys can't come to a resolution, there needs to be a working group established.
I appreciate that. Just to clarify, UA Resolution 11 says that the UA will file. Can't get this done. We're going to follow code because we don't want to wind up in a position this year where we said, oh, no one's followed it. But I appreciate that. I believe we'll be able to reach a resolution, but I appreciate that.
Yeah, to follow the code, though, you have to
sacrifice it. Yes.
Yeah, just a note, that should be a very high priority for us.
It is. It's a very, when it comes to us, we'll be on our agenda as the top of the business. I'm unfortunately not currently chair of the assembly, it was not, I didn't have the provisions. Contacted the administration directly about the resolution. That was told to Mr. Kaufman, who contacted them this morning. Between yesterday and today, he provided a comment to them. So my hope is that things will move quickly. The resolution was accepted, I believe, a week or two ago.
Okay, but right. So the next meeting, which is 2 weeks from today,
that would be correct.
You anticipate that will be the highest.
Assuming that we have some language, yes. I actually was going to say, this is a semester outlook. We have 3 formal scheduled meetings left.
Yeah.
Which is that we are on the clock, which is also why even the code changes, I'll be scheduling some more public listening or public engagement because we need to use it. On that, I was considering that next week I won't be on campus, but potentially having some form of virtual meeting or some other, whether that be Zoom or otherwise, discussion. Assuming people are interested, it may just be working, but. That might be a possibility. I'll send an email out to get some general feedback. No, it's great. I suspect we have many. We'll continue moving forward. In terms of the last item, there's a gaming code. President Pollack last night reiterated her intent to have a code looked at more holistically. I discussed with a number of members privately an idea for, at first, reorganizing the code. That's insane. Right now, the violations are all over the place. This is just doing the cut and paste of reorganizing these, even just internally. And then, so that's as you can actually look at the thing and figure out, okay, what is redundant, what is duplicative, and start editing. Because the concern was, and President Pollack also pledged resources if we need it, is it's a large undertaking to look at a large document. So in essence, excluding the one portion that required board of trustees approval, because that is a different animal entirely, to look through and say, okay, how can we reorganize this to make it so that the procedures are in one place, the offenses in others, and clearly, so it's more clear to delineate instead of going through titles, the various titles of the code. That's something that I actually intend to spend some time with the break on, at least to draft something. Obviously, getting done this semester is not going to, unless by some barring a miracle, it's likely not going to happen just because of timing. That being said, to have something to move off of, to have some idea of a draft, I think is doable. And I think also it's good because it allows us to inform a conversation to see where we are. It is a big undertaking this year. I wouldn't say got away from us, but the working group, with the working group being convened, with a number of other items that have come up, our agenda has become full. And we've met this year so far more than the past 5 years combined, just so far this year. So this committee has been working better and in a more efficient way. And I want to thank everyone for that, because it's, I know it's a drain on everyone's time, including my own, and a little lack of sleep to get things done. But we are moving along. So that's where we are. I also the codification of the interview processes. We actually have a draft for that, which I will be looking at over the break, and hope to have circulated for our bylaws as it's incorporated. Here's the policies we follow regarding the UHRB staffing. We really don't need to reinvent the wheel every year. That also will be coming after the break. I have Michelle, and then I have Richard.
I listened to the president's address yesterday from the UA website. She did mention the model code of conduct, which might be a place to start for organizations. So there's, in sort of like the same way that they have the model rules of evidence or the model rules of federal procedure, there's a model student code of conduct that I can set up and people don't have access to.
I'm actually surprised until the audience posted that quickly. So I mean, well, certainly, I'm more than happy to look at that. I don't recall if she mentioned it, but again, the goal is she did mention, look at other universities' codes for ideas of organization on content. Very adamant about that. And also because this is the CJC, at the beginning of her address, she took a moment to dispel what she had heard, the rumor that there was talk that the president may want, the administration may want to yank the code from the UA. She said in no uncertain terms that it's patently silly, politically not happening, and since then, it is not happening. That being said, something to be aware of, and something that also I should make note of, is the Consensual Relationships Working Group has a policy draft that is circulated. That policy, it regards a whole bunch of faculty as a resident for students who are in authority, student faculty or staff from authority or others. In it, there are sanctions, and it has been brought to our attention that the concern that there's an idea that those sanctions for student undergrads and grads would be outside the code and inside of policy, as we discussed when we were talking about, actually we talked about the working group. Generally, the code, assuming you are outside your working obligations and in, or in this case, a student, either graduate or undergraduate, sanctions reside in the code. This policy appears to make the only carve out being 6.4, and it's a very narrow carve out, only looking at sexual assault, sexual harassment, which the sponsors of the work, the members of this work group have explicitly said is not what their policy targets. Therefore, it would appear that that policy, the disciplinary provisions relating to students, should find their home under the code under the current system that we operate under. That is an ongoing discussion. But it's something I want this committee to be aware of because, again, practice is the code is the students, and as the students are always under it, faculty and staff are primarily under it when they're acting outside the scope of their employment. When they're on the scope of employment, the faculty handbook will control, as will the university policy library, barring a couple of times. For instance, the JA and the JCCs may only be removed by the board. But as I decide those small carve outs, policies elsewhere will control.
Well, the two things. The JA thing, when we have language over the break or whenever, can you post that for comment, for public comment as well?
You mean language for the JA equipment?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I want to have a committee look at it first because my understanding.
I'm just worried about time. You know, post it. It's provisional. We've talked about it. We've done work on it. Just get it up there so that. It's a, I mean, it's a pro forma thing, I think, in this case. But let's dot that I, right away. The thing about the consensual relationships is some of it, this is going to be something to talk about when we revise the code in part, but some of it is student-student. Mm-hmm. So we have a student proctor in a course and so forth, and a student is taking the course. Some of it's graduate students, of course, TAs and so forth, and they would be in that. In the long run, I'm no longer repeating myself, but in the long run, I'd like to see the code cover everybody, so that all of the things that are in the consensual, it's not going to happen this semester, but all of the relationships that are going to be covered in this consensual thing will be covered in the code. For one community, and it's overlapping.
Thank you. I appreciate that. My intent and anywhere next year will go, I think it is important for the CJC to be aware of that. And that the only, I mean, in essence, we already have a bifurcated system of 26.4 split out of code, which those who are at the work group meeting will know has caused incredible amounts of confusion. In my estimation, trifurcating the system will only make that worse, especially considering, in this case, as I said, there's the code, in essence, has jurisdiction in this area. I know the policy effects of writing a policy over the summer, the university would look into that, but it's just, it's a very delicate matter. So there are concerns raised by members in the past that there are some who may wish to erode the code piecemeal over time. And for those individuals who under that, who operate that frame of reference, there was obviously a concern, and I think a reasonable one, that pulling things out of the code piece by piece, starting with 6.4, moving to this, is indicative of a slide. That being said, the code is currently written with period control here, and I will be ensuring that the university is aware of that. And I'm not sure who else I will speak to about it, but it needs to be widely known, because after speaking with the members of the working group, or that working group, or task force, and telling them this, they essentially said, we don't really, we're not really concerned about that, which I found deeply concerning, because the code is a community document, and ceding something to the administration without communities working on it is something that I find personally concerning, but the committee obviously off the side.
Since we're almost done, another suggestion, which is before the meeting 2 weeks from, get commitments from the members of the committee to come, because we can't afford another
delay.
Yeah. So, you know, if it doesn't, you know, you get firm commitments so we know we're going to have a floor.
Of course, thank you those who are here. I would appreciate it. I would appreciate it.
Well, get them to RSVP, and if they, you know, you don't get enough, then send it out again and say, I mean, this is, you're a member, you're obligated. I'm just concerned the next two meetings or whatever we have. But
I know you may be doing thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it. Have a nice one.